A year ago Sunday, Hurricane Matthew inundated eastern North Carolina with rain. The storm caused major flooding in Kinston, Lumberton, and other small towns. A year later, some of those towns are struggling to survive. Jay Price visited Fair Bluff in Columbus County and Seven Springs in Wayne County.
A highway runs through Main Street in Fair Bluff, just south of Interstate 95 near the South Carolina border. It's a classic small downtown, a full block of storefronts on both sides, and there's decoration, a couple of dozen American flags that flap in the wake of the semi-trucks whistling through on their way to feed commerce somewhere else. The flags seem festive until you look closer.
To make the downtown look viable and what have you, just the reason we got them out, and to keep you from looking like a deserted ghost town and what have you.
Mayor Billy Hammond stands on the sidewalk and points at one storefront after another.
This is our senior citizen building. Was our senior citizen building. We had two hardware stores and a clothing store and a drug store. None of these had flood insurance.
A year after the flood, almost nothing has reopened. The heart of what makes a town, is just missing. Not only have business owners been unable to afford to reopen, many residents are still living somewhere else.
It's very heartbreaking to come to town and see nothing happening.
But something is happening behind the scenes. Fair Bluff is one of six communities hit hard by the flooding that are getting special attention from the state and a federally funded center that helps communities become more resilient. The others are Seven Springs, Lumberton, Princeville, Windsor, and Kinston. Kevin Smith is a professor at UNC Chapel Hill's Department of City and Regional Planning. He leads the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Coastal Resilience Center for Excellence and also a state recovery initiative.
And so one of the things that we're working on is helping them develop what we're calling a relocation strategy. So we are looking at and actually we'll be interviewing the people participating in that program, trying to understand the household, family size, their economic standing, and so forth, and use that information plus what we're calling a land suitability analysis, looking at properties outside the floodplain that might be suitable within their extraterritorial jurisdiction that might be suitable for new housing.
Moving part of the town to save it. His team is also helping the six communities deal with the bureaucracy of state and federal aid programs and develop recovery plans that aren't just about bouncing back. They're about trying to retool the communities in ways that make them robust enough to adapt to whatever comes their way. Rebuilding local economies, protecting businesses and homes from future disasters, finding creative ways to deal with open space where damaged homes have been demolished. Things the communities didn't have the resources to handle on their own, even before the flood. These are places where losing even one or two homes in the federal flood damage buyout program is a sharp blow to the tax base that pays for the things that larger communities take for granted. Many of the communities damaged by Matthew already had problems before the flood. Fair Bluff is one. On a side street, Mayor Hammond flags down a pickup truck.
Hey there.
Hold on. Behind the wheel is Randy Britt, who owns a small business that sells power equipment like chainsaws. He's trying to run it from the back of the still-damaged shop. Like small towns across much of rural America, Fair Bluff has been on a decline for years, and young people have been leaving for jobs somewhere else, leaving mainly older residents on fixed incomes.
We've been trying to transition to figure out exactly how we can continue to exist, and then this hits, and nothing like this has ever happened.
Britt says it's crucial to get the downtown businesses open again, but the main barrier to starting a small business is often the capital it takes to set it up, and raising that money a second time can be impossible. There weren't even enough customers before the flood. That's why the town is hungrily eyeing that stream of highway traffic that runs through it to and from Myrtle Beach.
We've got to come up with some way to attract people, to stop people passing through, so that we can have enough of a business district here to supply the simple things people need on a daily basis. How do you do that? With these buildings we got now? Are they going to be torn down? Are they going? Some of them going to stay up? I don't know. I'm 70 years old. Am I going to go in there and spend $150,000, $200,000 to put everything back? Not likely. Now, the front end of the store I'm in right now, I might go back in there and clean it up, and I might add some hardware items when we find out what direction we might want to move in, but that's not going to happen until probably the first of next year.
Surely, he said, with all the thought that the experts the Resiliency Initiative is bringing in, some plan, some way forward will emerge.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think we'll exist, and I think we'll slowly come back, but it's going to be a while. It's going to be a while.
To continue to exist. To even say that raises the possibility, however remote, that the town might not survive. For one of the other flood-ravaged communities, the end isn't theoretical at all.
I grew up in a small town.
It's that chaotic time for busy restaurants when the breakfast cleanup and the lunch preparations overlap. And May's restaurant is bustling, but it's the only thing in Seven Springs that is. That's why one recent morning, a group of men was gathered at a back table. One was Adam Walters, a graduate student at NC State University's College of Design and a member of the State Recovery and Resilience Initiative.
So if we were to have a meeting to start talking about some of the major issues related to the future vision of Seven Springs, do you see some sensitive issues that maybe we would be difficult to talk about?
Yes, there were sensitive issues. Mayor Stephen Potter was thinking about one in particular.
I think if people hear us talking about the town dissolving, then that is in a way telling them we're giving up. If I'm going to give up on that, I might as well just resign and go home.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I'm wasting time, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to do that.
This isn't the first time Seven Springs has had to fight for its life. Its long history includes a Civil War battle that almost destroyed it, a fire in 1921 that almost destroyed it, and earlier floods did serious damage too. Despite that extraordinary record of bouncing back, and despite Potter's defiance, this time Seven Springs might not be able to continue as a town. The fire department and rescue squad were flooded out, the post office is still operating out of a panel truck, fewer than half of the 115 or so residents before the flood remain. The possibility of disincorporating is so real, an expert was brought in earlier this year to explain the legal process. Seven Springs' entire budget is about $50,000 a year. Only part of its revenues come from property taxes. The rest come from sources like a share of the state's sales tax. But if enough owners of damaged homes take federal buyouts and don't return, the missing property taxes could make it hard to pay the town's bill. The team meeting in the restaurant mentioned some of the ideas that had already been batted around. Maybe a farmer's market, greenways to connect the town with the nearby cliffs of the new state park, antique shops. Much of what seems possible, like turning vacant lots into space for campers, is tied to recreation on the very river that keeps tearing into the town. But there are at least possibilities for turning things around.
This town's been here too long. You know, this was the first settlement in Wayne County.
Yeah.
And if we're going to go down, we're going to go down swinging.
Swinging, with help from the state, the federal government, and the experts from UNC and NC State. Jay Price, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.